Last year, there were 45 domestic terrorist attacks, disrupted plots, threats of violence, and instances of weapons stockpiling. NJOHSP defines domestic terrorism as violence committed by individuals or groups, including race-based, single-issue, anti-government, and religious extremist ideologies, associated primarily with U.S.-based movements. Tune in to our discussion on the threat presented by domestic terrorists and NJOHSP's process for tracking their activity in 2017.
This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. Welcome back to Season 3 of Intelligence Unclassified, a podcast about counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. Join us as we talk to local and national experts in these fields to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on current trends and issues facing our great state. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed, iTunes, or Google Play. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website, www.njohsp.gov.
Thank you for joining us today. This is part two of the Mapping Terror series, and today we're going to look at the domestic terrorism incidents from 2017. This is a follow-up from last time, which where we focused on HVEs. So I have two of our analysts joining us today.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So to start off about the domestic terrorist map, Matt, can you kind of explain what the purpose is of it?
Yeah, Jared, definitely can. So this is our visual guide for all the domestic terrorist incidents that we've tracked from the 2017 year. And in it, what we do is provide the different incidents, how many perpetrators were there, the type of method, and just kind of give all of our readers, viewers, subscribers an idea of exactly what we're looking at here for the office.
Matt, can you tell us where we can get this map to if some of our listeners want to kind of view it while we go through this podcast today?
Yeah, definitely. The map can be found on our website, njohsp.gov. This map, along with our HVE one, which was previously discussed, as well as all of our other unclassified products can be found on there, and they cover a wide range of both international and domestic groups.
Thanks, Matt. Dylan, where does this information derive from? Why do we look at the whole United States and not just, let's say, stuff in here in New Jersey?
So when we put together this map, we use a variety of all unclassified open source information. So we'll use media, we'll use databases, we'll use a variety of statistics and different data that comes from a variety of different sources. All the information is unclassified, which means that it can be shared with the public. And that's why our domestic terrorism map gets a lot of traction every year, because it's all information that the public can share and use and everyone can be a part of it. And the reason we look at the entire United States as opposed to New Jersey is because all the actors that we've seen in all these domestic terror incidents, they are willing to travel. So we will see individuals from all over the country traveling to different places to conduct these different incidents. So just because we live in New Jersey doesn't mean we shouldn't focus on the rest of the country. In addition to that, we'd like to get a big picture when it comes to trying to come up with threat rankings. So in order to decide how each group ranks on our threat scale, you have to get a big picture and you have to analyze all the data from across the country throughout the entire year.
Thanks, Dylan. Matt, can you kind of discuss some of the charts at the bottom of that and why we have them located on this map, whereas we don't go into too much detail on the HVE map?
Yeah, definitely. So the charts are just a nice quick reference to the different information that we highlight in the top portion. So when you look at the basic map, you have all the different incidents in there with a lot of different numbers and everything. So if you want to come on, just quickly see like how many incidents there were or where they were located, the type of method that was used. This just gives a visual representation for the percentage of what's used compared to another. So with our three different ideologies on there, if you wanted to see that one ideology committed X amount of attacks or a certain percentage more than the other, you can easily see that without having to track all the numbers yourself, go through the whole process of trying to figure out exactly what it is. We provide it all right there for you in a nice visual representation to kind of fit with everything else in the poster.
And just so our listeners know out there, this map is set up a little differently than the, let's say, the HVE map. And that's for a number of reasons. The primary reason is when we look at HVEs, a lot of these terrorist incidents are carried out by individuals. Sometimes they work in small groups, but a lot of these are individual based. So we have a chance to kind of do a deeper dive into these people. Where are they from? How are they radicalized? Did they convert to, let's say, Islam or any other religion? Whereas when we look at domestic terrorist incidents as a whole, sometimes these are from unknown individuals. Sometimes they're groups of maybe five or more. We look at it more incident-based rather than based on the individual. So shifting gears here, let's kind of look at some of the motivations of the individuals on this DT map. Dylan, what are the categories for motivation? what do they really mean, and what ideologies fall under each category?
Thanks, Jerry. So with the motivations, each group, they all have their own separate grievances and motivations that inspire them to do what they do. So the three motivations that we normally look at, they fall under the three categories of anti-government, race-based, and single issue. Anti-government extremists are individuals who believe that the United States government shouldn't have control over them and that they have too much control in their affairs. Race-based extremists believe in the superiority of an individual race. When we look at white supremacist extremists, black separatist extremists, individuals essentially who believe their race is more important than another. And then single issue groups are groups that participate in violence stemming from domestic or political or economic issues. That includes animal rights extremists, environmental extremists, and anti-abortion extremists, as well as anarchist extremists.
Thanks, Dylan. And I know that sometimes, especially let's say with the single issue extremists, a lot of these ideologies kind of bleed. So let's say anarchists, for example, we know that there's this anti-fascist or Antifa movement going on, but we also know that some of them might be involved with like environmental activism. Is this something you see a lot often?
So it is something that we see pretty often. Like you said, it's not exactly black and white where each individual or group will fall under one specific ideology. It is possible that they can bleed over, and we will see members of other groups participating in different actions involving various ideologies. Like for an example, like you said, we could see anti-fascist individuals who may possibly embed themselves with an animal rights group or an environmental rights group. It's really, it all just depends, and it's very likely that that could happen.
So moving on, after motivation, we kind of break it down to action then. Action includes attacks, plots, threats, and weapons stockpiling. Attacks and plots we won't go into too much detail on. Those are pretty self-evident. But Matt, can you kind of explain some of the background between threats and then weapons stockpiling?
Hey, Jerry. So for threat would kind of fall into the category where somebody's not really planning an actual plot, or they're not actually conducting an attack. They're just making threats to someone. That could be through different means, whether it's online, written, verbal. They're pushing beyond just the normal threatening language to the next escalation. That's really where you start to see the charges come in. And then the second one for weapon stockpiling, that's if one of these extremists is amassing an arsenal of weapons, ammunition, explosives, and they're doing this because they are either planning to currently or in the future plan some type of attack or plot that they're going to use what they're stockpiling to go through with it.
These are individuals that are charged with other offenses, and they've kind of crossed, obviously, the free speech and other constitutional laws as well, right?
Exactly.
We do have another category on the HVE map, and that's material support. Material support charges, as far as the federal government's concerned, can only be used for foreign terrorist organizations. So that's why we don't have that here on this map as well. So the next section we kind of would like to talk about is some of the New Jersey-specific incidents. Matt, you're the DT expert on this, so have you start off. Can you kind of go into the four New Jersey incidents from last year?
Yeah, definitely. So New Jersey saw a few different domestic terrorist incidents over the 2017 year, and we highlighted them on the map there. The four that I'll go into are the race-based ones, and specifically I want to highlight one that we actually had a call-out box for on the map involving a white supremacist named Joshua Stever. So Joshua Stever is the leader of an international white supremacist extremist organization called Aryan Strike Force, and they're based out of Phillipsburg in Warren County, New Jersey. Last year in April, Stever, along with members of his group, were arrested for conspiring to sell methamphetamine, firearms, and machine gun parts to fund the organization's illicit activities. And this is one of the more extreme cases of weapon stockpiling and narcotics that we saw from white supremacists over the last year, so that's why we wanted to really pull it out. Jersey does have incidents in these ideologies in the state, and they are working to further their cause. There were two other white supremacist extremist incidents that occurred, where one, a white supremacist sent threatening letters to several different businesses and police officers in New Jersey, and there was an arrest of an Atlantic City Skinheads member last year in December on illegal weapons and narcotic charges. And then finally, there was one fourth incident, which was an anti-government one, which I know Dylan was going to highlight, seeing as he knows a lot about the anti-government side.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. So the anti-government incident that we saw last year was in March. Following a car accident in Bergen County, police arrested a sovereign citizen. He was failing to comply and he was resisting arrest. This was after he provided false documents, which is what led police to believe that he was a sovereign. After the resistance of arrest, the individual had an altercation with the police officers. So the police arrested him for assault as well as, like I said, failure to comply and resisting arrest. And an associate of the individual was also arrested for participating in the altercation targeting the police.
Thanks, guys. Wrapping it up here, Matt, can you discuss any new trends that we might have seen this year as compared to previous years? Things that we've seen, what's changed from past years, and really kind of what we see going forward.
Yeah, really what I'd like to highlight is something that we actually talk about in our 2018 threat assessment, and that's the changing environment from domestic extremists. So throughout the last year, we saw that domestic extremist groups, particularly anarchists, militia members, and white supremacists, were clashing amongst each other, would travel across state lines, and were at times subject to foreign influence. I would say the best example of this was the Unite the Right rally, which occurred last year in August. This was the largest gathering of white supremacists in the last 10 years. This also brought with it several different counter-protest groups, as well as militias from across the states. So this is really, we saw this mass mobilization of all these extremist ideologies moving to one central location. And when you had all these competing ideologies put with each other in one area, that's when all these clashes started to occur and the violence really started to erupt. So this was something we really hadn't seen in the past year, where a lot of these incidents stayed in their typical geographic locations, or they just moved to the more major metropolitan areas. This is where you saw a lot of the different extremists from all over coming to one area and doing all this interaction amongst each other.
So for all of our listeners out there, we have this product as well as a number of other products on our website at njohsp.gov, or you can go to njhomelandsecurity.gov. Both websites will take you to our publications. We also hope that you continue to listen to our future podcasts. I think we have a couple good ones coming up in the future, new topic areas that we can explore going forward. And we're always open to ideas. So if there's a topic that you want us to explore more or talk about more, we can have one of the analysts here or someone else from NJOHSP come in and talk about it. Or we're always willing to reach out to some of the experts in the field from across the country. So again, thanks for joining in.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.